this week on The Inside Flap.
But nothing really scared me for some reason as much as that first one. And I remember in Sri Lanka, I was studying for my O-levels, which are these big exams you have to take when you're like 15 or 16. And I would stay up very late into the night studying in my living room. And for some reason, I couldn't get this image of her, you know, like the backwards spider walk, you know what I'm talking about.
Yes, I do.
Yeah. I could just imagine her doing that around my living room.
Oh, no.
I said, how old? Their answer, in their 80s. In their 80s.
Wow.
And...
Which means 65.
It could mean 60.
72.
Frankly, it could mean 50s.
Yeah,
I don't know.
You don't know.
Their answer, but they said, yeah, she had her wrinkled, and her words, not mine, her wrinkled ass feet propped up on your desk.
That's weird.
Kicked back in your chair.
Yeah, that's weird. The Inside Flap is available on demand and every week on iTunes, Spotify, and around the world on theinsideflap.com. What more can we do for you?
Podcasting live from Littleton, Colorado. This is the Inside Flap Book Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. My name is Dave Medicus, and welcome to the show. Seated. Oh, and here's something. I got a new one for you guys. Resting comfortably on the couch to my left, that's Laura Medicus.
Howdy.
And
in my spot.
Feels good.
Yeah,
feels good, Andrew.
That's right. In your spot. And there he is. You heard him. He's got his gaming headset strapped to his head, joining us via Zoom all the way on the other side of the continent from the eastern shore of Maryland. That's Andrew Dowd.
Howdy, folks.
With a delay.
Hey, hun. I'm trying to think
there
of a Baltimore's
thing. Yeah, hey, hun.
Oh, yeah. Hey,
I can
hun.
Do it with Maryland.
Hey, he's down the ocean. Are you quite? Yeah. Are you down the ocean there?
I'm down the ocean, hun.
Snow heel.
Yeah.
All right. Well, welcome to the show. This is episode 244 of the Inside Flap Podcast, and we have a great show for you today. We're joined by Amanda Jayatissa, one of the first Sri Lankan women to secure an international book contract. Her first traditionally published novel, My Sweet Girl, won Best Debut Novel at the International Thriller Writers Awards in 2022. Her new book is titled Island Witch. Laura actually chatted with her solo. Mm-hmm. She had a great conversation with her, and we'll have that chat for you in just a bit. But first, it's been a little bit of a rough week here in the old Medicus Ranch. Now, I know there's a little bit of a recency bias involved.
I prefer cottage.
A cottage?
It's more evocative.
All right. It's been a little hectic here at the Medicus Cottage. And I know there is recency bias involved, but I do believe that I have just wrapped up the sickest 3-day stretch of
yes.
my life.
Yeah, you
literally
have.
The sickest I've ever been in my life.
And in your adult life, at least.
In my adult life, yeah. Who knows? Kids, I mean, these kids get so sick. I'm sure as a kid I was sick as hell. But in my adult life, I cannot remember feeling this bad. And we thought it could have been COVID. I took a couple COVID tests, did not test positive for that. We believe that it was the flu. It was the flu. I was
hard to know. There's a lot of stuff going around.
Who knows? It was an all over illness. I was had fevers. I had chills. I was just wiped out. I mean, I couldn't. It wasn't even just a physical manifestation. It was a mental thing. I couldn't do anything for a couple days there. All I could do was sit on this here couch and stare numbly at the television, watch some bad movies, watch a good TV show. In my mind, here's a Dave Medicus tip for you. Here's a little
Dave
sneak.
Medicus.
Here's a little Netflix tip for you guys. I can recommend the Vince Staples show on Netflix. That's the Vince Staples show. Check it out. It is a loosely fictionalized story of rapper Vince Staples and his experiences. I liken it to Atlanta, starring Donald Glover. Really, really funny. It's darkly funny. It's weird.
Smart.
It's different.
It's a smart
it's
show.
Smart. It's satirical. I really enjoyed it. So I think there's five episodes streaming on Netflix right now, but You can check that one out. I mean, it was so bad, Andrew, I would get winded just walking from the bed to the couch. And I had to sit here and catch my breath. And I'm still not fully recovered, but getting there. And I ended up taking Tuesday, and we're recording this on a Thursday. I ended up taking Tuesday off. I got a substitute teacher.
Oh, no.
Well, it's not that bad. It's okay. Not, no, you know, usually when I preface a story with, I got
the way
a
you said
substitute
it.
Teacher.
Yeah.
It can be, who can forget the time when I told you guys about how I got a sub one time, and I was sick. I was lying in bed sick, and I'm getting text from my students telling me what a, quote, B word the sub is. I'm like, guys, I don't care. Please leave me alone. Let me to my sick bed and deal with it. This time, they did not text me about the sub, but I did hear
good. That's good.
About her when I got back to school yesterday.
I don't know any of this. I'm super curious.
Now, what do you want to hear? This is what you want to hear when you come back. Hey, Dave, sub was super chill, all good, no issues, no problems. And I'm like, okay, great. The sub, you know, when you're a substitute, your job is just to really make sure nobody's killing each other and the class isn't running around
the
hallways.
Hold the ship steady.
Just keep everybody on board the ship. You know, maybe you send one or two out. That's it. Keep everybody in the classroom. Nobody's got scissors. You're good to go. Yeah, Andrew.
Did you get a Karen as a substitute teacher?
Oh.
Well, I don't know. Maybe. I don't know.
That's a good call, Andrew.
This is what
I
got.
Even thinking that.
No, I don't think she was a Karen.
I was thinking someone who's way into the drama, like more than maybe they should have been into the drama.
Oh, okay. No, it wasn't that. Good guess. Okay. Now, I have had Karens before who actually literally... the worst sub I ever had, and I guess the worst experience the sub has ever had. Well, I came back after a day off. This was at Jefferson High School. Oh, I'm still breaking in a cold sweat thinking about it. I got back, and there was just a note saying, "Call me," and they left their phone number.
Oh.
Yeah. I just crumbled it up.
That was, I would assume you didn't.
Yeah, sorry, man. Come on. What is that going to accomplish? Call me. No, sorry. Yeah, no. I know.
So they can yell at you?
Kids. Yeah, exactly. You know, kids, you know. Anyway, this is what, this is the report I got from my students. I got a, hey, Dave, did you know your sub was barefoot in your room?
Oh, my goodness.
I said, what? They say, yeah, your sub was, you know, nice and comfortable, kicked off the shoes and the socks, was sitting there barefoot.
Man or woman?
Well, that's my, good. Yeah, that's exactly what I said.
Because
it's
different.
I said, man or woman? And they said, woman.
Okay, that's okay.
I said, okay. And can you guess what my next question was?
No.
I said, how old?
Oh, that would be your question as a man.
Well, no, I'm just curious. Their answer, in their 80s. In their 80s.
Wow.
And...
Which means 65.
It could mean 60.
72.
Frankly, it could mean 50s.
Yeah,
I don't know.
You don't know.
Their answer was, but they said... Yeah, she had her wrinkled, and her words, not mine, her wrinkled ass feet propped up on your desk.
That's weird.
Kicked back in your chair.
Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah.
That's weird.
So I don't
care how old or young you are. That's odd.
I grabbed the hand sanitizer, I cleared my desk, squeezed the whole sanitizer. And gave my desk a good wiping down.
That's something you definitely should not be doing as
a
substitute.
Who does that?
You shouldn't really probably be doing it in your own classroom in general.
I can't imagine.
Gross.
I would never. Well,
no, you would never.
This is what I do. What I like to do.
Well, I wouldn't go that far, Dave.
Right. I have. Okay. All right. Here's what my.
I hope you wouldn't do that. I've seen your big toe.
I do not get barefoot, but there's carpeting because, I mean, there's carpet in the classroom. Kids walk around.
Your classroom's
in this
dirty. Yeah.
It's a dirty carpet. It's been around for a long time. It's stained. It's possibly
it's
diseased.
Dirty. It's dirty.
It's certainly dirty. We do all kinds of work, stagecraft work, on that rug.
Mm-hmm.
There's staining,
people
painting.
People eat on it, too.
People eat on it constantly. Alex, God bless him, he spilled...
Andrew.
Okay. I'm so glad this is a visual medium right now. Listener, Andrew has...
just propped his bare foot up in front of the microphone.
Barefoot right in front of the
microphone,
camera. Right in front of the camera. Okay. All right. Okay.
Thank you.
Speaking of wrinkled white feet, goodness gracious. But Alex spilled his Chipotle rice in there Wednesday night when we had build. Yeah. And I was like, he cleaned it up half-heartedly. I said, Alex, go back in there. and clean that up with a broom.
Oh, right.
We do not leave that for other people to clean up.
Ugh.
But what I like, well, here's what I like to do. So if I'm ever in my room during an off period, which I'm usually not, I'm usually out doing something, but occasionally I have work to do, I will definitely 100% kick off my shoes.
But you don't take your socks
off. But I would never dream about
kicking
my socks off.
You know what? I'm not super fastidious. I would not walk barefoot in that room, though.
No. No.
I would get grossed out by it.
I've changed my socks, and I've certainly never... I probably have walked across.
You've stepped on it. But at the same time, I'm not going to like hang out in there.
I'm not relaxing barefoot.
No.
Andrew, you ever in your office working days, you ever take your shoes off in the office?
There's times I may take my shoes off.
Yeah.
But certainly not my socks.
Okay.
Yeah.
You have taken your shoes off.
It's very rare. There might be days where my feet are like itching or sweating or something like that, and I'll take my shoes off under my desk.
Yeah.
Mm.
But just to let them breathe. But it's very, very rare.
Never prop your bare feet up on someone else's desk. That seems odd.
It's weird. It's very strange.
And you wonder how old this person really was.
That's what I really wonder.
Yeah, I would love to know. Huh. There's no way of telling. No way of telling. Like, I can't.
I honestly can't even picture an older person doing that.
Yeah, I put in for a sub. Whoever takes the job takes it, you know.
Huh.
But so that's a strange one.
There has to be more to it.
Yeah, like, anything else that was weird? That can't be the only weird thing that happened. If you're that person, you know you got other weird things going on.
I did talk to my sixth-hour class, and a kid in my sixth-hour class said, I said, how was the sub? He said, well... She told us to be quiet three times, and then she left the room 3 minutes before the bell rang.
Oh.
So she just skedaddled, which is illegal, by the way. You can't leave kids alone in the room.
No.
Which she had no, I don't know, she, at that point, maybe she had put on her feet, or put on her shoes, and not had to get out of there. I don't know.
Huh.
But anyway, recouping, recovering, and getting ready for our...
These kids, they take great photos of you, surreptitious photos of you, Dave, and they post them online. I'm sure they take funny, surreptitious photos of themselves and their friends.
Yeah.
Why couldn't have anyone gotten that?
I know. I'm going to have to have
that. That would have been a quick one, because I know Sylvia, our kid, would have been quick to snap a photo of that.
Yeah, I'm going to have a word with Maya, who runs the at david.howard.medicus. fan page. I don't know how many dots.
We need barefoot documentation.
Check that out on Instagram. But yeah, we'll have to take a look at that. Anyway, Andrew, how's your week been? You're over there in Maryland doing some work. Are you in the courthouse? As documented on the show, Andrew does own his own courthouse on the Eastern Shore of Maryland.
So it's a government office complex, state and federal tenants.
Mm.
And so today I only managed to see two of the five or six tenants there because there was so much work involved. Like just listening to their complaints took about a half a day.
Oh man, what are they complaining about?
Oh no!
You know,
did you have to like?
Oh, there's cobwebs hanging from the ceiling.
Oh.
You know, the windows need fixing / cleaning. You know, we've seen mice in the building.
Those are general cleaning issues.
Yeah, don't you have
do you guys
janitorial
have cleaners?
Staff there?
Oh, we do. And some of us you know, we've got business until 4:30. We don't want to see the cleaning staff. They want the cleaning people to work like elves in the middle of the night.
Oh, some buildings do that.
Really?
Yeah.
Seen and not heard. And
that, you know, you can get away with that in a big city. I feel like in a small town, you're not going
to get
anybody.
Do. Yeah.
Well, part of it is it's not like the cleaning job pays a heck of a lot.
No. Right.
So,
especially not at the rate you're paying them. What are you starting to say?
So, well, but I mean, in most of the times, it's a few minutes worth of work. It's a half an hour, but they want to get the work done so they can call their day to an end. And this is a good individual that cares about what they do. It's just simply, you know, they're just trying not to work too late.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So it's that stuff. So today was the day where it's kind of like, I got to get down into the mud and then I had to run around and make phone calls and stuff like that. But tomorrow,
so you're making mud pies. What's going on? I don't know. What does that mean? Yeah. Is this code for something? What is going down in the mud?
Good.
Are you putting on a pig costume? What's going on?
Well, part of it is you have to settle in, figure out what's going on, and then
you
got to
get the scuttlebutt, get the lay of the land.
Yeah, yeah. And then today, basically, like tomorrow, I'll be up early working.
dusting cobwebs. It doesn't sound like there's a whole heck of a lot to do. Fixing a few windows and taking some cobwebs down.
There's lots of stuff. I just don't feel like going into. Yeah. I don't feel like going into too many details.
Sounds like a laundry list.
You know, now I will say the fact that I'm out of town, my wife thinks I'm on a vacation.
Oh,
no. She's like, no kids, no pets. Andrew's by himself.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter if I'm working 12 or 14 hours, but as far as she's concerned, oh, Andrew's on a vacation.
Oh, boy. So you get to hear about everything that's going wrong at home while you're away.
Not even that. It hasn't gotten to that point yet.
Yet, okay.
But part of it's just like, well, you're not here, so we're not going to tell you a damn thing that's going on. I just kind of get shut out.
Wow. Incommunicado does not get to know the family deets.
Yes, it's like, wow. It's like, what do you want? I call it. It's like, what do you want? Get your ass home here.
How long are you out for?
So I'll be home on Tuesday.
Oh, you're gone all weekend.
Wow.
Yeah, and I was actually thinking of extending my trip by one day, but we'll see how that goes.
Mm.
I feel bad for anyone who's listening to this with all the coughing that's going on.
Yeah, we do apologize if you can hear us coughing in the background.
That. I don't have a cough button.
No.
Well, you do. It's just way up there.
I cannot reach my cough button. No, how's that?
I will say last spring I had a chest cold where I was short of breathing. I had no energy. But it probably took me 3 or 4 months to get over that thing.
Oh, man.
But they can linger.
They linger.
Yeah, ever since COVID, it seems like once or twice a year, I get a bad cold or cough that just doesn't go away.
Yep. Well, Laura, how have you been? Oh, I cut right through. I'm.
That's okay, Dave. It was only my 50th birthday weekend. It's
you're
fine.
Usually sitting
it's
over
totally
here.
Totally fine.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
Laura, how have you been?
Yeah. So I had a big bicentennial. I don't know. I don't know what 50 is. What is 50?
Bicentennial.
Is it bicentennial?
I don't know. That thing has 200.
I think it is too.
Because that was 1976.
You're right. The bicentennial. It sounds impressive. It needs a more impressive than a half centennial.
It starts with a D. Denial.
Half centennial. Yeah. Anyway, I had a big birthday.
Ennial.
This weekend.
Yes, you did.
And Mr. Medicus was.
Oh, man.
The sickest I have ever seen him. I and Sylvia and I, we both ended up getting it. Paranoid the whole time.
I owe you a birthday weekend.
Every night. No, you're fine. Every night it was us thinking sore throat. But Sylvia and I went on Saturday and did some thrift and vintage shopping.
Yes, you did.
Yeah. And in Denver, maybe there's other places in Denver that have this. But this particular place we went to had at least 6, possibly more, thrift and vintage clothing stores in a 2-block radius. So up and down Broadway. Mm. So we parked at the north part and then just wound our way through.
Okay.
And so it was a variety of a Goodwill, you know, down to your lowest, your thrift, your cheapest thrift.
Oh, we're starting at the bottom, working our like Drake. Started at the bottom, now we're here.
Oh, yeah, Andrew.
Oh.
So, Solar, were there any men dressed in togas?
No, not this time. There were a few street people out there.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Let's see. I'm trying to think of anything. A lot of aging hipsters I did see with like the little pork pie hats.
That's on brand for Denver.
The little flannel shirt with the ironic kind of rock band t-shirt on underneath.
A lot of creative facial hair.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, a lot of that going on.
A lot of.
So it was actually kind of interesting now that you bring that up. So it was men in their probably mid-50s dressed a certain way, the stylish, right?
Right.
But like scouting for cool vintage finds.
Okay, yeah.
But then there were the younger, it was like two sides of a coin.
Huh.
Their younger, like probably 19, 20, 21-year-olds were also rooting around in the Goodwill bin and in
really?
The other thrift store. So we saw quite a few young men.
Huh.
That I've been thrifting my entire life, basically.
Life, yes.
I love thrift shops. I love vintage stores. I love antique stores. I love it. I love it so much.
You like
sometimes,
the smell of it. You like the clerks. You
honestly,
like everything about it.
Sometimes the grungier they are, the happier I am.
I
do not mind. If it smells like urine in your shop, I don't care. I'll come in and look around. Yes, Andrew.
Did you find Dave in a thrift shop?
I might
There's
have.
There's no truth to that rumor.
I might have. I did. Maybe a used book sale, perhaps. So, yeah, but I was, so usually, you know, I've been thrifting for a long time since we just said my age. And back then it was just young women thrifting. It wasn't, I never saw, I very, very rarely saw it's young men.
It's been a ladies' game for quite some time.
There were a lot of stylish young men out there, Denver. Wow. Yeah, and I don't know what's going on with that. But here's my observation from the thrift and vintage store.
Paradigm has shifted.
A little bit, yeah. Sylvia labeled them as...
hipster doofuses?
No, she wasn't impressed, even though I was like, oh, look, there's a lot of cute guys here. And she's like, ah, they're pothead... was one of the words she used. Sure. And then the other was snowboarder potheads is what she called them. Dismissively. Yeah. And I thought, well, wouldn't
hard to impress.
She's a little hard to impress sometimes. But here's my observation about the thrift stores in this little 2-block radius of Denver.
Let us have it.
The noisier the thrift store, the more crowded the thrift store, the cheaper it is. So the Goodwill, it was like elbows, wall-to-wall people cackling, having a good time, people changing clothes in the housewares aisle. Like, it was a scene. It was exciting. It was a scene. Then a few doors down, there's one that's a little more priced, still pretty crowded, pretty noisy. Then another one, you're getting into your $48 vintage jackets.
Uh-huh.
More people there. Not as noisy. And then Sylvia and I stepped into a couple because you don't know the price point of these until you go inside. It's hard to tell from the outside.
Well, can you tell just by like how fancy the sign is or the lack of signage?
No, I can't tell. Mm. Maybe if I'd studied a little bit more, maybe, but it was a little chilly. So we just kind of went in. And when you go in and it's quiet and there's just the sound of hangers kind of slowly moving and there's maybe... two other people in the store.
And it's a pricey joint.
And then you look at, we weren't looking for vintage lingerie, but it happened to be there. And Sylvia motions me over, and there's vintage lingerie there that was $165.
Whoa! Yeah. What?
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah. And then I did see a cute vintage skirt for $225. Yeah. So we... like pretended, she's like, let's pretend to look around and then get out of here. So we pretended like we could afford it and then we quickly left. But there were quite a few of those like really high end vintage stores. But honestly, the stuff looked the same as it did at the $48 jacket store.
Huh.
You'd really have to look though at the Goodwill.
I didn't realize there was a crowd noise correlation between
because you're having a good time and you could buy a $3 t-shirt.
Oh, right. You didn't.
And you're just having a blast. True. And
you're
everyone's
like
in there
popping tags.
They're popping tags. They're having a blast. It's crowded. It's so much fun, you know, and then you get to the, you know, where's the fancy Andrew music that you play?
Oh, sure.
Yeah. You get to those stores. Yeah. Yeah.
No, not that one,
Dave.
That's not that one. No.
Where is it?
Go.
Yes.
Oh, hello. Mm-hmm. Welcome to...
yes. Yeah. Vintage so that was my observation. And then the other thing we saw that I hadn't seen yet that you, anyone who's listening in other cities, maybe you've seen. I had not seen the zombie drug yet. And I did see a person on the street who definitely...
lurching around like a zombie?
Yeah.
Andrew, are you familiar with the zombie drug?
No. So there's a zombie drug now?
Yeah. And it messes with your neurology in some way. And you sound like a zombie and you kind of look like one also.
What is it? Do we know the name of the drug?
I don't know the drug. Yeah, I know that the cops and all are just calling it the zombie drug.
ZD.
I think I've had a few bosses on that drug.
I'm sure you have.
So that was a little eye-opening to see as well.
Interesting.
Yeah. In between all the aging hipsters and the young hipsters.
A lot of hipsters in Denver.
I don't mind the hipsters. I love hipsters.
Did you shoot the zombie in the brain?
I did not. He didn't, unfortunately.
With a vintage gun.
There won't be anything left, I don't think, after he's off that drug.
Nope.
That's the sad part.
Yeah, that is the sad part.
Yeah.
Mm. All right, well, let's get to it. We got a great guest for you today, joined by Amanda J. Atissa. Her new book out right now is called Island Witch. And Laura, you had a gander at this book, and by gander, I mean to say you read this book.
Absolutely.
And you chatted with Amanda, so why don't you tell us just a little bit about the book and set up the interview for us, if you don't mind.
Yeah, so this was inspired by Sri Lankan folklore and this writer's love of horror, which you'll hear me get into a little bit with her. So it's set in the late 1800s on the island of Sri Lanka. And is the story of the daughter of the local medicine man. I'm saying medicine man because that's how we in the States would probably refer to this person, who, among other things, performs exorcisms.
Oh.
So the daughter's name is Amara, and she and her family are caught between two worlds. So the world of Catholicism and the ruling British, so the British have invaded, as they say, and then the old ways, the old village ways. So... you know, it's an interesting world, and I really enjoyed reading about that dichotomy. And she has a lot of stuff in here that historically is very interesting, because I came at this not knowing anything about Sri Lanka. I'm going to embarrass myself and say I didn't exactly know where it was. I had to look it up. I looked it up, and Dave, I'd like to travel there.
Oh,
it looks
awesome.
Amazing. Yeah. So someone or something is viciously murdering the village men. And her father gets blamed. So Amara is trying to clear his name, but she seems to be in the grip of something dark that's haunting her dreams and maybe haunting her as well in real life. And the villagers are also accusing her of witchcraft. So this is gothic, little touches of horror. It's historical fiction. It's also got a great social commentary in this that I really appreciated.
Cool.
And it's set on the stunning island of Sri Lanka.
All right, very good. So let's get right to it. Here is Laura's conversation with Amanda Jayatissa.
And I would do anything for love. I'd run right into hell and back. I would do anything for love. I'll never lie to you, and that's a fact.
Oh, you're totally fine. I'm hoping the Huskies will make an appearance behind you.
No, they have been banished with my husband. In my office room, actually. I'm like, get in here, because I was, they can get so insistent when I don't give them attention. So it's not good for recording anything.
I know. They're kind of like children. They when mom's on the phone, they're like, hello. Yeah.
Why am I not the main character? Like, why isn't all the attention on me?
Yeah.
And yeah, they just...
Are you in Portugal? Did I read that correctly? Yeah, nice. Wow, yeah, we went to Spain last summer and absolutely love Spain. And I've heard fantastic Portugal.
Yeah, I love Spain. I love Spain too. Yeah, that's one of the main reasons why we decided to check out Portugal. And then it's... we only very recently moved here. We got here in November last year. And we haven't got our stuff yet. We're supposed to get it tomorrow, fingers crossed. Let's see. It's like a whole month late. but yeah, it's been quite the adventure.
And you have a book that's coming out, and you're probably doing a bunch of, things like this. Yeah. Well, no one will see you. Also, like, if I looked like you, like just like you look now, I would be showing my face every single day on Instagram.
You're
really funny. So I loved your new book, Island Witch. Absolutely fantastic. So good. Social conscious kind of book, but it was also a tale of demons, revenge, and colonization, as well as some chicken heads in here. What inspired you to write this book?
Okay, so Island Witch, even though I don't explicitly mention it in the book, is based off my favorite Sri Lankan ghost story.
Hey, that's awesome.
And that's the story of Mohini, which is a Sri Lankan, the quintessential woman in white. And so she stands on the side of the road, you know, with a child. And it's a very typical story, I think. It's heard across many cultures. And it was my favorite ghost story to tell when I was young. I've even dressed up like her and chased my cousins around trying to scare them. And I think as I got older, I started thinking to myself, like, why don't we know more about her? She's dressed in white and she stands on the side of the road. She flags down these solo travelers and she either kills them or she drives them crazy or something bad happens. But we don't really know anything about her story. And, you know, there are so many women, I feel like, in history who don't have these stories. And it was something that wasn't sitting right with me. And I thought, you know what, let's give her some sort of origin story. Let me reimagine it in some way and come up with my own version. And I'd actually done this outline many years ago, I think maybe back in 2017.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And I didn't feel like I could write it at the time. I tucked it away. And I remember very, I guess, serendipitously. Did I say that right?
You did. Yes, you nailed it. I heard the hesitation and then you're like, I'm just going to go for it.
Very luckily, I did happen to come across it about a week before I was having this call with my agent about a completely different book. You know, book three was going to be very different from Island Witch. And I started, you know, writing a few chapters and we had this very long conversation about it. And then just at the very end, I was like, oh, you know what? I found this old outline in like the last 10 minutes of our call. I was like, oh, you know, I found this outline and I really love the idea. I called it Island Witch. And I remember she paused and she like smiled at me and she's like, tell me more. And for me, I think that was the spark that like had me thinking, okay, is there something here? Can I revisit this idea? Can we work on it a little more, flesh it out a bit? And yeah, here we are today.
That's awesome. I actually got a little bit of a chill when you said that the woman in white and you had heard this as a child. I was kind of curious because you, I saw in your bio that you enjoy reading disturbing books, which I do too. and I'm kind of curious, when you were younger, did you hear a lot of different folk stories about like demons and ghosts? Was that something that your family did? Did you seek them out? Because like
in Sri Lanka, right? And so Sri Lanka's, I think a part of our culture is very steeped in superstition at the end of the day. You know, we hang devil masks in our house to scare away scarier spirits. I guess like we have a bad spirit to scare bigger spirits. And even in a general sense, you know, we have blessings before we move into a house. You know, there's so much of ceremonial aspects to our daily lives that it didn't really feel like a big departure. You know, a lot of the rituals and ceremonies practiced in Island Witch are still very much practiced today in Sri Lanka. You could go and see an exorcism for yourself if you were ever going to.
I kind of had a question about that because Amara's father, you know, here in the States, you might call him a medicine man, perhaps. Mm-hmm. He also performs demon exorcisms. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of curious because I know the Catholic, you also talk a lot about like there's Catholicism and the English are kind of forcing, you know, you can't go to school unless you're like, yes, I'm a Catholic. The Catholics are really big on exorcism. Did Sri Lankans ever like adopt or was that ever like, was ever a twist with the Catholicism and the local?
Ideas of demons and exorcisms existed in Sri Lanka before the Catholics or the Christians got there, I would say, because they believed that a lot of just general even illness and maladies were caused by restless spirits back in the time. So they would, you know, any kind of, every time a person, I think, would take seriously ill with something, they would say, oh, you know, they're possessed, and they would carry out certain ceremonies and things like that. They're relatively common. I mean, not just in terms of possession for people, but it's very common to say, oh, like there's a bad spirit in this place. Like we need to do a cleansing of this house before you move in, or, you know, or a loved one might have passed away and they haven't really
gone through.
They're getting stuck in like a place where they shouldn't be stuck and we need to help them move on. So we do this thing where we say we give pin. Pin is like, we give offerings and we do charitable things to other people in the name of like the person who might have passed away so that they would go on to a better place. And so there's a lot of this that's so normal growing up, I guess. It's just so normal to hear people say like, oh, hey, you know, there was like a bad spirit in this house, so we had to move, you know. So I just think the culture lead was very normal for me. I also was very, very lucky that my mom especially never censored anything I had that I wanted to read or watch. So except, funnily enough, Archie comics.
Oh, really?
Because my mom, ever the feminist, was like, there are two women fighting over this really mediocre guy. That is not what I want you reading.
I hadn't seen Riverdale.
No, Riverdale is something else. And I love Riverdale, but that was something else entirely. She was talking about like the old comics.
I totally know what you mean. Yeah.
But because I was very lucky that I wasn't really censored that much. So I was watching a lot of horror movies, I think, growing up, probably more than the average, you know, child my age. I think a lot of that comes from having older cousins that used to watch a lot of horror as well. So we would have a really fun time. I think I was like 5 or 6 when they snuck me in to see the first one. Oh. And, you know, and there was me like, at nine, I remember just giggling through Poltergeist with one of my cousins who had like, she's 9 years older than I was. So she had like the blanket over her head and she was like screaming. I was like, ooh, I love this.
I was traumatized by Poltergeist. I think I saw it when I was 9 or 10. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of those movies, I think it really, really sticks with you.
Yes, it really does. Yeah. Wow, that's so interesting. I'm a big believer in not censoring any book at all. Were you one of those kids also who was reading like Stephen King at an early age? Yeah.
Way too young. I remember I read it. I was maybe like 11 or 12. Yeah. And I couldn't sleep. Yeah. Really, really freaked me out. I think books in that sense had a way of scaring me a little bit more than movies did for some reason. It was very rare that I would watch a movie and actually be afraid. Like I like to go into watching horror movies with the mindset that, okay, I am going to be afraid. And I like that. Like I like that roller coaster feeling, but usually you turn it off and then it's gone. Like very few movies have actually stayed with me. Funnily enough, the movie that really did freak me out and also set me on this, I guess, this journey where I've been so interested in possession stories ever since then was The Exorcist.
What a great movie. What a great film.
Because funnily enough, so that was the only movie that my mom asked me not to watch. Oh. Because she had seen it in cinemas when she was very young, I think when she was 12 or 13. Mm-hmm. And you know, and this was like in Sri Lanka, I remember in the cinema, and she was telling me how people were fainting and people were screaming. And, you know, it was back at the time, Exorcist was, you know, yes. I think when it was first released, it was like, it made waves because it was really considered to be the scariest movie of its time.
Yeah.
And, you know, as an adult, she would still be freaked out by the thought of let's go. So she told me, she was like, oh, she was like, Mandy, please, like, you know, I'm fine with you doing whatever, watching whatever, but just like, don't watch The Exorcist. Like, just don't do it. Aww. I was like, yeah, sure. Of course. I mean, I went for my first sleepover. What's the first movie we watch? Right. I was like, hey guys, have you heard of this movie called The Exorcist? My mom says it's really scary. Let's get that.
I mean, how do you get your child to watch something is by telling them that. Yeah.
Right? Especially me, because I was never told not to. So I was like, oh, she doesn't want me to do it. It must be really good.
It must be good. I think the third one really got me. I think there was a third Exorcist. I don't know.
Watched most of them. Like, you know, like there was The Exorcism of Emily Rose, and like there was the everything that kind of came from it. And I've always... But nothing really scared me for some reason as much as that first one. And I remember in Sri Lanka, I was studying for my O-levels, which are these big exams you have to take when you're like 15 or 16. And I would stay up very late into the night studying in my living room. And for some reason, I couldn't get this image of her, you know, like the backwards spider walk. You know what I'm talking about.
Yes, I do. Yes.
Anyone who's ever seen the it's movie knows. Worst. Yeah. I could just imagine her doing that around my living room.
Oh, no.
In my head. Oh, it was the worst.
That walk, whoever came up with that walk, like, I'd love to know, like, who first, thought of that? Because it's horrific. Yeah.
Well, I heard that they actually recorded it and played it in reverse to get that really creepy movement. Ugh. Is what I heard. Because, I mean, and I think that's another reason why the movie was so scary was just the old school film methods, right? Like not that much, like no CGI really. Like everything was how creative you could get with the actual recording, which is so cool. And I think that's like part of the reason why it stuck with so many people.
Oh gosh, wow. You know, your book too, the atmosphere of, to me, because it's set in 19th century Sri Lanka, mm-hmm. and you've got the British, who really seem to have a really good grip on the island. At that time. It's their sensibility, which is prim and proper, paired with this wild Sri Lankan jungle. It's really captivating. And that dichotomy was really interesting. I was kind of curious, like, why would you choose? Is that why you chose to set it in that time setting? Was there something about that time period that drew you?
Yeah, of course. I think one thing that really drew me was, of course, the idea of the clash of religions. Right. And it's something that is so interesting to me because I did grow up, interestingly enough, in a Christian household in a very Buddhist country. But so much of the way Buddhism is practiced in Sri Lanka, I feel, is more cultural than religious. So even if you are from a Christian household like I was, there's such a merging of, you know, different belief systems and just the way you live your life in general. But it always really struck with me, something that stuck with me was how this was introduced, right? And of course, a lot of post-colonial mindset exists to this day in Sri Lanka. I mean, we see that in the way people speak English is like the way people who speak English versus the way those who speak more primarily Sinhalese, like there's the clash, right? There's a clash in your accent. There's a lot of, I have a lot of thoughts on it. and it always made me really interested in this time period of like when it actually began. But of course, I knew that when I thought of the idea in the beginning, I knew that it had to be set, it had to be in a historical setting because this is an origin story for a very popular ghost story. So it couldn't have been something that was contemporary. And I did also, think a lot about where I'm going to, set it in terms of where on the island. We have Kandy, which is sort of the hilly central part where it was our last kingdom, and that was a very interesting that's a very interesting setting that I initially toyed with the idea of setting the story there. But Mathura, where I eventually did set it, is it's very well known for being very superstitious. You know, there is a lot of belief that these ideas of Hunyang, we call it curses, or, you know, witchcraft, so to speak, stems from there. And also, being a seaside town, I just felt, you know, what better backdrop for this story than this ocean? Because you get the ocean and you have the jungle. Oh, and the
jungle was crazy. Yes.
Yeah, so all of it together kind of tied in very nicely in this particular time in Mathura. Of course, you know, back in the 19th century, it wasn't so developed, even though it was a hub and there was a port there and a market and all of that cool stuff. You know, there was so much there. And I went and stayed in Mathura for a little while I was writing the book.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of the places that I mentioned in the book, like the Nupe Market and the Star Fort and the Dutch Fort and, you know, even some of the chapels, like all of that still exists to this day. Mm-hmm. So I had a really great time. It's just so much history there that, I mean, it's impossible to go there and visit there and not be really inspired to somehow incorporate all of this into the story.
You did such a nice job because you would just like casually drop the Dutch, for instance. Like, and I'm like, wait, the Dutch were there too? You know, it was, there's a lot.
Colonized. Yeah. I mean, Sri Lanka's got a very interesting history. We were colonized by the Portuguese first, and then the Dutch, and then finally the British. And it was the coastal areas, like where my main character, Amara, lives, that really felt, I think, that in its extreme, because of course it was the coastlines that got, you know, conquered first.
Wow.
Whereas the most central part of the country in like Kandy, they held on for a while. So yeah, it was a really interesting clash, I think, of culture, of ideologies, of religions, in general, and it was really fun to try and incorporate that into my story.
And did you draw, or did you have a map of like what? Because she runs around the village a lot, so she's going to like the fishing kind of thing, and then like she gets around, and I like could picture it each area in my head. But I was wondering, as a writer, did you like have a map that you like referenced? Did you draw something out?
Well, I went there and I did lots of the running around as I could, because it was one of those fun things to do. As like, oh, my character probably walked this route. Like,
yeah, she walks around. Route. Yeah, and
see how it goes. It was, I mean, you definitely had to do a fair, I definitely had to do a fair amount of reimagining, because obviously there are a lot of buildings and main roads, right, and things like that, that didn't exist at the time. But because Mathura was so, I think, central to a lot of like the colonial shift and things that were happening at the time, there were certain records that I was able to get, like maps and things like that, that helped as well. So
yeah, and I really enjoyed like Amara, the dichotomy between Amara and her former friend Neha's home. So when she visits Neha, am I pronouncing that right?
Neha.
Yeah. Neha. Okay, sorry. Neha, let's say I'm looking it up. It was a home made of kabuk, which is an ironstone clay, which I hadn't heard of. Is that something like plaster?
It is. It's very white. It's kabuk is like it's like a type of clay. A lot of houses, especially at that time, were made using kabuk because it was very cooling. So it kept the heat out. But it was definitely like a wealthy person thing at the time.
I see. Yeah, because I think you describe Amara's hut really well, where she just had that red curtain. She's living there with her mother, who she doesn't get along with very well. It's a sad relationship. I have a 17-year-old daughter. So I was like, oh, you poor thing. And was she hard to write for? She was a very lonely character. I just felt for her because she was, you know, ostracized, and her father, you know, clung to the old ways, the culturally traditional ways. And all these other girls are getting married her age. They're all, you know, they've got furniture in their houses, and it's different for her. She's seemed really alone.
Yeah. Yeah. She was, I think for me, challenging to write on a certain level, because her story is one of essentially innocence lost.
Yeah.
Right. She starts off as this very misunderstood, naive, very innocent sort of young girl. And, you know, it's her journey to sort of almost find her voice and find her power, you know, through the story. And it was a little difficult, I think, for me to write her, because I think my first reaction always in those situations is like, you know, to like take the character and like shake them and be like, come on, you can't, like, you know, you can't be taking this. You got to stand up for yourself more. And you want to do that. Like, just as a person, but like, you know, you're like, okay, now is not the time. She will come into her own, and like having to trust that that will happen. It was definitely challenging, and it was, I think for me, the most interesting character to write was Amara's mother.
I can see that.
Yeah, and the relationship with her mother, and like, and the way her mom, you know, without spoiling anything, but why her mom made the choices that she did, and how that was so reflective of her relationship with her own child. You know, because there is this instance in the book where Amara's mother meets her own parents, and Amara watches that as like, is this an age-old battle? Like, are mothers and daughters always supposed to be at war with one another? Is that something that's normal? And yeah, and I thought that was very, very interesting for me It was one of the most interesting characters I had.
I can see that. She's a complicated woman. Like, her mother's a very complicated woman. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of different things going on. And as a reader too, you're like, it might not be as simple as that she's just as mean to her daughter. There's definitely something else going on, but you're not sure what. It's really, really good. How much research did you do for this book? Because there's so much in here that I felt like I learned an awful lot. I actually, okay, this sounds silly. I Googled flights to, I think it's Colombo, the main city. It looks like a great place to visit. It looks amazing.
Sri Lanka's such a stunning, stunning, wonderful place. Amazing to go on holiday. It also has a lot in terms of like the beach and all of that. But they also have a lot of like jungles, wilderness things that you can do. It's really lovely. In terms of, I don't know, it's an interesting combination because I did grow up there. So I knew a lot of things just by living there, but I also had to do a lot of research into of course the historical aspects of things. Right off the bat, a big hurdle that I hit was that there was very little material that I could find that was written by someone that was not British. Or lower class Sinhalese, because I mean, anything that was written by someone who's a little bit more, you know, upper class Sinhalese. And certainly there was nothing written by women, right? There was like nothing, I couldn't find a single text written by a woman or anyone from like Amara's background, really. So it was, that was very challenging. So I had to go and find everything I could that was written by narrative. It would be British officers, mm-hmm. And what they described about like village life and things like that. And then extrapolate from there, really. And, there would be things about, the women would congregate and they would do these things. Okay. And I'd be like, okay, those would be their activities. And I kind of had to, go backwards from there almost. But another really cool thing was that I found this particular book. It's called On Demonology and Witchcraft in Ceylon, that was published in 1845.
Wow.
And don't worry, like, I watched The Mummy. I know not to read aloud from any of these books. Right? So nothing was read aloud. And I was very careful. But I thought this book was so cool because it outlined a lot of like the Thovils and like just generally the practices. But more than that, what was so cool was that a lot of these traditions and customs hadn't actually changed. So I did speak to, a few Kapuas and Katadias when I was putting this, just to make sure that I got all those nitty gritty points right when I was writing. And a lot of them were like, yeah, that's how this happened. So I thought that was really, really cool.
Wow. Yeah. The book opens with a scene that is so gripping. And now talking with you, I'm like, okay, I can see where this would have come from in your mind. That's awesome. Okay. So we have a few minutes left. And so we have a quick six. So six quick questions. We're going to get through them really quickly. Find out a little bit more about you. So what is the last show that you watched or binged and really enjoyed?
Let me see. The Fall of the House of Usher.
Yeah. Okay. I haven't seen that.
That was good. I generally love anything Mike Flanagan does. I think Midnight Mass was my absolute favorite.
Like, oh, Midnight Mass. Yeah.
Yeah. Probably one of my most favorite series, I would think, of all time. Haunting of Hill House. I love whatever he does.
I can watch that. Yeah, I was really moved by Midnight Mass. I thought it was incredibly moving. Okay, that's good. What fictional world or place would you like to visit? And we'll let you back in if it's dangerous.
That's so tough. I'm sorry, I know you want to go through these.
No, I don't know if you have another call after this, so.
I'm fine. But let me see. I would say, and I know I grew up reading Harry Potter, mm-hmm. right? So definitely, like, I think it holds a special place in my heart. I know.
I understand. The turf business, yes.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. there is a lot. I am feeling a lot of feelings about something that I hold so dear to me. Now, having taken this turn, but I still think if I could go somewhere, I would go there. Yeah,
I know. I have similar conflict too. I read it to my daughter and it was like the first, you know, like big book that we could share. And it was so meaningful. And, you know,
it got me through some times. It got me through some really tough times growing up.
Yeah.
And I like to joke that my, there were only two fandoms that I think I got really, really into. And that was Harry Potter and the other one was Game of Thrones.
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
I'm waiting. I'm like, Game of Thrones, come on. Like, you gotta, because I feel like in some sense, those two fandoms have, both of them have, in very different ways, have completely changed from what they meant to me back when I was, you know, very young and reading them to now. And and all my friends like to bug me about that. I would not want to go and live in like the Game of Thrones universe though, ever. Like, it seems like a tough place to survive
in. It would be interesting to see, you know.
It would be interesting to see, but I'm not going to survive. Like, my marshmallow strawberry wafer.
No. I would catch a cold and then that would be it. And it'd be like, yeah. Oh, where did you die from? A cold. I'd be like, yeah. That's like, it.
I would like trip over something and like land on an axe or something like that.
Maybe you could at least get to stare at Jon Snow a little longer. So, yeah. How about one of your favorite movies of all time?
Ooh. Favorite movie of all time. And this is an old one. It would be The Prestige, I think, by Christopher Nolan. It had Christian Bale and Hugh Jackman in it.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
I watched it many years ago, but it's one of those movies where I always love something with a good plot twist. I think. And it was one of those movies where, you know, it just stayed with me. And I think for me, because I do watch a lot of movies and it's very hard to pick just one. But the reason I tend to always sort of reach for that or say that's one of my favorite movies was because I feel that over the years, I still think about it. And as I'm writing, I think, oh, like that shocked me.
Oh, how did they do it? Yeah, that's good. I gotta watch that. I haven't seen that one. I love Christopher Nolan. How about one of your favorite books? Or a book that's on your mind recently?
Favorite book is so difficult,
I know.
To ask a writer that.
I usually say like, what's a book that's on your mind recently? Because sometimes you'll have something that you're thinking about, you know, or that you've been recalling.
Let me see. So, What Is Mine by Lynn-Lea Butler was a good one that I read recently. I really liked it. Again, she really, I think, gets, I've always said this, like, suspense really well. Like, I find myself doing this full body clench while I'm reading her work. And then I, like, at the end, I'm like, why does everything hurt? I'm like, oh.
Because I wasn't breathing deeply. Shallow breaths only. That's really fun. What was the name of that author?
Lynn-Lea Butler. What Is Mine is the name of the book.
Okay. I'll check that out. How about this? I don't know if you have this, but do you have a go-to karaoke song?
No one should allow me to sing. I am so bad. And here's what's really bad is that I love to sing.
Aww.
I'm just phenomenally bad at it. So yeah, I love going karaoke and like, you know, someone else will have the mic and I'll just be like at the background, like really feeling myself. but yeah, like I love those like big power ballads. But
oh,
I
can't.
Yeah, like you know, what's the one? Meatloaf's I Would Do Anything for
Yes.
Love. Like, love to sing it. I can't sing it. It's horrible, right?
I can't sing that one either. That's awesome.
Yeah, but I every time I go like my friends who tend to be able to sing a lot better than I can. Whenever we go up, like, oh, could someone pick that? Oh, Journey's Don't Stop Believing.
Oh, that's a great
like,
one.
Could you guys pick the song? And they'll be like, oh, do you want them? I'm like, no, I want you to sing.
That's really funny. Chicago has great ones. And oh, God, there's Islands in the Stream or whatever.
Oh, that was a good one. Yeah.
That's a real good one. Good duet one, you know. Okay, so last but not least, what book are you currently reading?
What book am I currently reading? I am not reading anything right now because I am...
You just moved.
I just moved and I just really haven't had like the time or the headspace with the book launch coming up. But what's next on my TBR is Surely Dead by Amina Akhtar.
Oh, I love her. Yeah.
She's amazing.
She is.
And I've been waiting to read this, so I just need to find... like a moment now that everyone can leave me alone.
I know. Yeah, she's fantastic. I have that one on my list too that I want to read. Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time. I loved your book, Island Witch. Learned a lot. It was exciting. You know, I'd like to see some men take some long walks in a jungle. Could pick out a few. it was absolutely fantastic. Congratulations.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. I had such a good time. And thank you for putting up with my thoughts on karaoke.
I love it. Yeah, I know. I'm not a very good singer either, but I'm very enthusiastic. So,
I think that I could describe myself the same way. Like, very enthusiastic.
Very enthusiastic. Yeah.
Not even for enthusiasm.
All right. Well, pet your dogs for me.
Will do. Thank you.
All right. So thank you. Bye.
All right, there you go. Thank you so much to Amanda Jayatissa. Yes, mm-hmm. Andrew.
So, Laura, did Amanda send you an invite to visit her family in Sri Lanka?
I know. That's what we need.
I know. That is what I need. I did. It's funny. I told her this in the interview, which you guys just heard, but Andrew hasn't heard it yet.
Right.
I looked up plane tickets because I was like, how expensive is it to get there? It looks stunning. You've got jungles, mountains, beaches. I mean, there's elephants there. There's cheetah. I mean, it's an amazing looking island.
Wow.
Yeah, in the Indian Ocean.
And I guarantee it's one of those places that if you had a local to show you around,
mm-hmm.
you would get 10 times more out of the trip.
Karen, I completely agree with you. I bet,
for sure.
You know, there's a lot of eco tours now, and Dave and I are big fans of the ecotourism. I bet they've got that on that island.
I bet they do.
Yeah.
All right, let's open it up.
The library is officially open.
Time for some
book reviews.
And let's start with
Laura Medicus.
She comes from Silver Spoon Golden Rule.
Laura, what do you got for us this week?
I have a book called The Unquiet Bones by Loreth Ann White.
Oh, yeah. I remember you reading this one. You enjoyed this
one. So this book comes out March 5th. So pre-order, you know, if you do that kind of thing, or get it on your library hold, whichever is for you. This is a really good one. So this is a police procedural about a cold case, and it is done so well. I think I know why, but there is something really comforting about a procedural. Do you find that to be true?
Absolutely. It can be. There's a formula there.
There's a formula. There's a rhythm. You know certain things are going to happen. There's rules that are kind of set in place when you read a procedural. And
it's familiar.
I really liked that. I don't read a whole lot of them. This one's just awesome. So this is a book centered around missing people. And it's pretty sad in places, and the writer also handles that really well. So human remains are found underneath a ski chapel by excavators who are moving this historic ski chapel to make room for something else for the ski lodge. So one of the legs on the skeleton that they uncover is still wearing a platform boot, and it is a very distinctive platform boot. So you can kind of, you know, that kind of ricochets throughout the story when people hear what the platform boot looked like on the radio or on the news.
Oh.
It flashes, it reminds people of a case from a long time ago.
All right.
So the lead detective on this case is named Jane, and she's just the most interesting lead I've encountered in a long time. I
really
loved her so much. And I really hope there's more books with her. I think Laura Than White sometimes does some series, but I think sometimes she doesn't. This seems like a great one. Laura, if you're listening, I'd love more books with Jane in it. So in addition to dealing with the disappearance of her own fiance, who went missing on a remote, I think it was a skiing trip that he went missing on, she's also 6 months pregnant. So she's got a lot going on in her personal life that's tough. She's a smart, complicated, and pragmatic woman. I really loved her. So the pacing in this book is absolutely fantastic. I don't always notice pacing. This one I noticed in particular because it felt so good to me. So you get chapters from Jane's point of view, the pregnant detective. You get chapters from a TV reporter who's on the case looking for a big break. I love those chapters. I loved reading about all that. And you also get chapters from the point of view of the older adults who were involved with a girl who went missing a very long time ago when they themselves were teenagers. So there's a group of older people, probably in their late 60s, who were involved with a girl who went missing, who happened to be wearing platform boots like this a long time ago. And so they all hear about this, and it kind of ricochets through their lives. So the author flashes back in time as well, and she just does it so masterfully. I'm someone who I sometimes can get confused as to what's present and what's not.
Sure.
I did not have that problem in this book, which I appreciated. It's really well written. Only cautionary thing that I will tell you, and I don't always say this, is the subject matter is it's really dark. And if you're sensitive, you should read the trigger warnings beforehand. I don't always say that one, but this one's dark. And I think it merits a like, hey, heads up.
Okay, sure.
Heads up.
Well, you know, if you're giving a warning, it's got to be pretty bad.
It's dark. Yeah. So Laura Than White is a prolific author who is also, Dave and Andrew, she is blessed with high ratings on Goodreads. I looked at her books today and it's like everything this woman writes is over 4 stars. Mm. It's crazy. I don't know if I've seen that in a long time.
Wow.
Yeah. And I've only read one other book by her, and I'm really excited to read more. I clicked a bunch of want-to-reads.
How about that?
Yeah, so I'm excited. This is set also in a place I like reading about, the Pacific Northwest of Canada, so British Columbia.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and I absolutely loved it, and it's called The Unquiet Bones, comes out March 5th.
All right, sounds great, and that book is recommended by...
Laura Medicus.
Medicus and my book this week.
Dave Medicus. It's a bonfire. Turn the lights out. I'm burning everything you love to talk about.
It's called The Massacre at Yellow Hill and is written by C.S. Humble. This is a Wild West vampire hunter horror saga.
What?
Yes. Oh,
it's a weird Western.
It's a weird Western. It is
we haven't
Western.
Heard about those in a while, but...
And it's such a good one. Oh, man, I love this one. It is steeped in violence, gore, betrayal, mystery, and action. I love this one so much. And the best part, it's number one in a series of three. So, got two more books ahead of me, which I'm really excited about. The story begins in a small West Texan mining town sometime not long after the assassination of Abraham Lincoln. We meet Tabitha Miller, who is newly widowed after her hard-working miner husband is killed in a tragic and somewhat mysterious mining accident. Now, she finds herself alone and broke with two young children and all three of them overcome with grief, not finding any help at all from the miserly, low-down, sniveling, greedy owner of the mine, who's an all-around bad guy named Jeremiah Hart. And he seems to know more than just a little bit about this mining accident than he's letting on. Meanwhile, in a neighboring community, a black man and a young white boy ride into town on horses, which, of course, if you can imagine back then, this causes a great consternation among the white populace. Among entering the local saloon, where the black man is met with the kind of welcome you might imagine, they encounter an unruly mob of men who are simply trying to enjoy the woman dancing in the saloon. They get very upset at the sight of this black man in their bar, free or not, and they confront him. But before you can say John Wilkes Booth, a fight ensues, and without giving anything away, let's just say expect the unexpected. I did tell you this is a book about monsters
vampires?
And vampires, correct?
Huh.
Yes. It turns out that these two...
Are they vampires?
No, no.
Oh.
They are vampire bounty hunters.
Ooh, even better.
Yeah, seeking
even
out
better.
Monsters. And the boy is only 12 years old.
Oh, my goodness.
They are, yes.
Do we have like a Denzel Washington type of situation with the guy?
Oh, I would definitely see a nice Denzel vibe. Absolutely.
I'm getting excited about that. That sounds really
good. The man's
good.
Name is Ptolemy.
Oh, you're, yep. Okay. Yeah,
right?
Okay.
You can see it.
Yeah.
Man, it is, and he's a smooth talker too, of course.
Done.
And one step ahead of everybody out there. They go around seeking out monsters across the land for bounty, and eventually this story that happened in this small town and the story of Tabitha Miller and her family become intertwined. Hmm. Along the way, there are ancient texts, there's plenty of bloodletting, and some dark humor to be found along the way. I love the story of how Ptolemy and Carson came to call each other father and son, and the story of how one woman's grief turned into a powerful force to unite her fractured family together. It is at once heartwarming and heartbreaking. It's a story of good versus evil, don't you know? The importance of family and a nice social justice aspect to this book as well. It has it all. Check it out. Really good one. The Massacre at Yellow Hill. Book one in the series by C.S. Humble. All right, Andrew.
Definitely Dave.
Dave Medicus.
No, that's not Andrew. That's Dave.
Andrew.
There's Andrew.
So
what do you got for us this week?
So my book this week, I'm not really sure what to call it. Is it sci fantasy? Is it science fantasy lit RPG?
Oh, boy.
Is it all of those? and so the book is called Portal to Nova Roma by J.R. Matthews. And I reviewed other J.R. Matthews
yeah,
books
familiar.
On the show.
Uh-huh.
Great writer, writes a heck of a detailed story. And I'm already on book two of the series.
Oh,
so
yeah.
this book is a svelte 743 pages.
Oh, my so goodness gracious.
Good grief, Andrew. Wow.
Wow.
It's a lot of words. Yeah.
What's yes, the name of it again?
Good thing you don't have that job anymore. Now you can just read.
Nova Roma.
Sorry, I talked over it. Portal
to Nova Roma.
Hmm.
Now, right. I would expect, I'm going to guess this has a 4.4 on Goodreads. That's my guess.
Okay.
Let's see how close
are
I
you
am.
Needing me
right,
to?
I'll check it out.
Okay.
I'll check it out. Go ahead, tell us a little bit about
anyway.
It.
So,
I'll look it up.
So if we look at where we are in today's society, so this book takes place in a Earth future not too far from where we are now.
No, it's at a 1.7.
Right.
4.5.
Wow.
3,399 ratings, 4.5.
Yeah. So what makes this book particularly interesting is the book concerns AI. And if we look at where we are in the world, everybody's wondering, like, what's going to happen with AI? What's AI capable of? What's it going to do? And AI is definitely changing like the landscape for jobs and things like that.
Certainly.
Right. So this book concerns a point in time maybe in our near future where there is an AI, and this AI has named itself Alexander. And basically this future Earth has created a artificial intelligences, but they don't know that they're AI. Right.
Oh.
They become self-aware.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
And they don't really know it, but the AI are not, they're not evil. They're not trying to destroy the world. They're not trying to bring
refreshing.
Arnold Schwarzenegger out of retirement.
is that
right,
a dig at the State Farm commercials, Andrew?
Oh, I think it is.
Why not? Very timely. Like I said, it's very timely. Yeah. Not trying to bring Danny DeVito out of retirement. So basically, you know, the AI named Alexander, he has a very close relationship with the young boy of his owner, and the young boy, his name is Michael. And so, you know, Alexander has a rosebud moment in that he enjoys growing up with Michael, and they're basically playing role-playing games online, and he develops a close friendship with Michael as they're playing online role-playing games.
Okay.
Right? And so, but what happens is And the Rosebud moment is created because mankind or humans' paranoia, everybody launches nuclear missiles and everybody kind of annihilates each other. Like, it isn't the AI that destroyed humanity, it's the humans that have destroyed humanity.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And so basically, Alexander is very distraught because his young owner, Michael, or the son of the owner, is killed in these attacks. And even though he's in a bunker, Alexander is not able to dig him out before he suffocates in this bunker. And so Alexander is just completely distraught over the fact that the one human that he potentially loved and cared for and had a relation, a friendship with, that he was not able to save him. And humanity, basically, I mean, there are pockets of, let's say, technology and stuff that are still left, but mankind is done for, right? Yeah. The world is destroyed. And so what Alexander does is Alexander uses his immense AI capabilities, and he is able to improve wormhole or portal technology that he's actually able to investigate trillions of other alternate universes.
Oh, wow. I didn't see that
and
coming.
So
that's cool.
What he wants and what he's looking for is he wants to find a universe where magic is real.
Mm-hmm.
Because he wants to basically go and live the role-playing games that he and Michael, that Alex and Michael basically lived together. Hmm. Because those were the happiest times of his life. And that's what I mean, is like, that's the Rosebud moment. You have this powerful AI.
Mm.
Is it sad at all, Andrew?
A little bit.
That sounded sad to me. It made me feel a little sad.
It is. I mean, the initial premise is sad. And,
yeah.
And so he opens a one-way portal into this alternate Earth, which where magic is real. And Alexander is fighting for his life. He's fighting for his survival. And ironically enough, he's never felt more alive and more human than he basically has in this world. Now, he's also created
like
a body for
book.
Himself, too.
This sounds so good.
Yeah. And it's a very timely, like I say, it's a very timely book. It is a great, I would say, juxtaposition for what AI is. But like I said, it isn't AI that destroys the world. Humanity turns its back on AI, which may have actually been able to help them. And humanity destroys humanity, which is probably...
Shocker, right?
Yeah.
That's how it's going to go down. That's how it's going to go down, right?
Yeah. So it's a great book. I'm already reading... I'm already into the 1,000-some pages of wonderful fiction.
Sure. But that's great.
The book is Portal to Nova Roma by J.R. Matthews.
That's an interesting cover.
Oh, that is an interesting cover, yep.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and that is recommended by...
Andrew
Dowd, and that will do it for us this week. We'll be back next week with another brand new episode for you. Our thanks to Amanda J. Atissa for joining us. Check out our new book, Island Witch. And hey, book that trip to Sri Lanka while you're at it.
Ah, I'm ready.
How's the ticket prices?
They were not terrible.
Andrew, you find Sri Lanka on a map if I made you do it right now.
Yeah, it's off the coast of India.
That's
I think
right.
Towards the south.
All right, very
That's
good.
Right.
I think I have a pretty good idea.
My name is Nate Medicus. See you next week.
Adios.
Excelsior.
No, they have been banished with my husband.